Good morning. Welcome to Digging the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldine, and this week I have Carol Carver, and she is a market gardener and has the island and farm on Puget Island, and we're going to talk about winter gardening and gardening on Puget Island. Excuse me. Good morning, Carol.
Good morning.
So, have you been a gardener all your life?
Well, my father was a gardener, and mm-hmm. his father and his grandfather, so I grew up around vegetable gardening.
Uh-huh. And where'd you grow up?
I grew up in South Jersey, which is not North Jersey. It's the southern part of New Jersey. And New Jersey is called the market or
the garden state.
For a good reason. And I grew up around a lot of gardens.
Uh-huh. Okay. And the kind of gardening was vegetable gardening.
Yeah, primarily.
Uh-huh. And so in your adult life, you're continuing it.
Well, I've been gardening since I've been on my own, mostly to have healthy vegetables and, you know, to some extent for the economy of growing my own vegetables. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I've been at it for quite a while now.
Well, there's nothing like it. I mean, it's so gratifying.
It is, you know, on a lot of different levels.
It is, yeah. Okay, and so you have a farm and you make some pretty awesome stuff. But not every, okay, so what do you grow on your farm?
You know, that's a hard question to answer. We pretty much grow a little bit of everything. Some things we only grow for our own use, for example, corn, because it takes up a lot of space. People that have been to our booth at the farmers market here know that we have a pretty wide variety of vegetables that we mm-hmm. grow.
Well, I know, I think my favorites are your fermented products.
Mm-hmm.
Kimchi and sauerkraut are
right.
Fabulous.
Thank you.
Yeah. I don't want to have my refrigerator not have it. I think it's great. And so now fermented things are really good for us. So,
you know, they are very good. And I think a lot of people don't realize that ferments are a natural product, that they're made just with the vegetables and salt and produce bacteria that's really good for our gut.
Mm-hmm.
Good ferments have not been subjected to any heat. And a lot of times people taste them and think that they're a pickle, that they have vinegar in them. But that sour taste is just a natural part of the process of fermentation.
Mm-hmm. So there's a difference. If people buy in a grocery store a fermented product, it's probably been pasteurized?
You know, I don't know that. I know that if you buy it from the refrigerated section, chances are good that it's not, that it's that it's a raw, fresh product.
Okay, so if you go to the pickle section in a jar and it's out at room temperature, or a sauerkraut at room temperature, it's had to have been canned.
That's
so
right.
It means it's
right.
been
heated.
If it's
heated. Not refrigerated, then it's been subjected
okay.
to heat.
Okay, and so that probably means that the bacteria or the good, you know, beneficial probiotics are all dead.
True.
And
right.
so then the benefit, you get the taste of, you know, of the cabbage, but you don't get the beneficial bacteria.
That's a really good point. So people want to be sure to go to the refrigerated section.
Mm-hmm.
And they're yeah. more and more available. There's a lot.
Right. You know, a lot of people think that they the only option they have to get those bacteria is yogurt.
Or pills.
And right. And lots of food have it. And sauerkraut is one of those foods. Miso is another. Tempeh is another. Fermented things that are not cooked.
Right. That's what you want to look for.
Or lightly cooked. So, all right, so let's talk about what else you've got at the market. come on, tell me what else.
Oh, you know,
you have some really cool spinaches that are different kinds of spinaches that are, they're thicker and hardier.
Well, this time of year, spinach is a hard thing to have. Most of the regular spinaches have bolted. We do sell something called perpetual spinach that's a beet chard. And in a little while, we'll have something called New Zealand spinach, which is also not a true spinach, but has a spinach flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And the beet chard is one of those things that people can grow all year round. So
uh-huh.
That is one of the things I would recommend that people look into if they want to have a year-round garden.
Okay, so you're dying to talk about why even bother? Why bother with growing through the winter?
I would like to talk about that because I think it's nice to have your own fresh veggies year-round. Mm-hmm. And there's a quality to it that has a lot more, that offers you a lot more than simply saving money. And my husband and I prefer to eat seasonally when we can, because it really helps us to appreciate the veggies that are here as the seasons progress. So we look forward to the availability of other vegetables while we are eating the vegetables that are here in the winter.
Right. Okay. So let's talk about the things that that people can successfully grow
right now.
Well, no, for the winter.
For the winter, yes. Yeah. I guess by right now I meant that they could plant right now.
Okay,
because
yes.
Because if you look at this time of year, if you look at your garden, there are some things that are, maybe you're getting a few peas, but the peas are pretty shot. And if you pull them out, you might have some room.
Right, because this is a time of year where stuff is just coming. I mean, with this year, everything is really late.
It's late, yes.
And I've just been planting more peas and beans, trying to get things going, because it's been so cold and wet.
Well, that's very true.
But I still have some bare spots. So
that's what you want to look for, is some bare spots. And if you have some, there are two kinds of plantings that you can think about right now. One of those are veggies that mature before the first frost date, so before...
Oh, quick things.
October. And we actually have like 60 to 75 growing days left. So if people look at their... the seed packets that they have, and maybe some of their favorite things, they'll see that there are many things that they could put in the ground right now, direct seed.
Okay, give me some specifics.
Well, you know, I'd like to give you a list, and if people have a pen and paper mm-hmm. handy, they might want to write this down. But I'd also like to say that this list I'm going to read off is from Nichols, which is one of our many regional seed purveyors. And their catalog this year is completely online. So if people go online and look at Nichols, they'll probably find this list. But here's what they recommend for August planting, direct seed, which means that you don't need to have plants. You can just start from the seed. Arugula, bush beans, beets, broccoli, cabbage, carrots, chard, escarole or endive, collards, cilantro. And cilantro is one of those herbs that will go all the way through the winter. We can talk more about that if we have time. Cress, kale, all different kinds of kale, one of the best winter vegetables. Leeks. Lettuce, and lettuce that is cold hardy. I think a lot of times people don't realize that there are seeds that are specifically for planting right now.
Oh.
And Territorial is another seed company that we have that's regional. And they actually have a fall seed catalog. And a number of the seed companies do that. And that's because the vegetables that they're selling for fall planting are... accustomed to growing in the cold. So they're different than the seeds that we plant in the spring.
Uh-huh.
Other things that you can plant are scallions, bok choy. A lot of the Asian greens go very fast, 40, 50 days. Parsley, peas, radishes you can grow all the way, you can plant all the way into October. And they're a 28, 30 day crop. So if you like radishes, you could be planting them every week between now and October.
What about those small turnips? Those white,
the little
delicious ones?
Yes. The variety that comes to my mind for those is it's called a Tokyo Market. There's probably several different kind, but they are wonderful. You can eat the greens and you can eat the roots as well.
And do you know how many days they are?
I Yes, I do, because I just planted some yesterday. The ones that I planted were 55 days.
Oh, so that's in that.
Definitely in this
window. I've never grown them, and I love them.
The other thing that you avoid by planting later like this, or you can try to avoid, are flea beetles, which are a little black, shiny bug that makes my vegetables holy, and I often tell people they're buying holy vegetables, because they are. But the flea beetles tend to die down later in the summer. Oh, so
I think they're all on the big potato patch right now.
they very well could be.
The
they like
potato
potatoes
patch
too.
Is completely holy.
So I was saying there's two kinds of plantings, and one of them is direct seed. Mm-hmm. You can also get starts. Mm-hmm. And if you're just getting going with winter gardening, that might be a good way to go to get some starts. I know you had Teresa from 46 North Farm on the program a couple weeks ago, and she sells wonderful starts that you'd be able to put in the ground right now.
Now, what I've noticed is in our community garden, some other gardeners have what it looks like started some squash, something in squash families. That they bought as plants, and some of them are doing very poorly. They did not transplant well.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have an idea what's going on there?
Well, squash is a big plant, and the roots are very sensitive, and they don't like to be transplanted.
Uh-huh. So they need to be really gently.
Yeah, or they're the one thing that I plant in peat pots, so that I can just sink the whole plant in the ground and not even try to get them out of a pot.
Uh-huh. So they have a rough time transplanting.
Right.
Oh.
Right.
Okay. So, okay.
They also might not be doing well because it's been so cool. But
yeah. Well, I got a volunteer squash in the in a pot that had a Italian prune. Well, it still has an Italian prune tree that we bought.
Oh, interesting.
And the tree died, but the the tree died, but the squash is doing quite well. I feel a little nervous for the quality of the soil, although the tree is not competing for nutrients. It's, you know, it's a big pot. Uh-huh. It was a big tree.
And you can always top dress. This is, I guess,
this
is a little
about that.
Little off topic, but squash likes a lot of nitrogen, so you could always just scratch a little nitrogen or compost right around the
Okay, so the idea of just like layering on the top isn't the deal. You have to mix it in a little?
Well, I think it helps if you scratch it in a little bit.
Okay.
But if you're watering, nitrogen moves through the soil very easily. So as you're watering, it will move down into the root
mm-hmm.
zone.
So can you evaluate the difference between the lazy gardener, which I'm the lazy gardener, just put it on top, and I think this is a problem, just putting it on top versus digging it in?
Well, I'm not real strong on soil science, but I know that some nutrients don't move through the soil as easily as nitrogen does. So, for example, if you're using bone meal for phosphorus,
uh-huh.
you're going to want to have that down around the root zone
uh-huh.
as opposed to putting it on the top. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people will put things on the top knowing that they're going to be pulling plants out and then putting new plants in. And just in the process of doing that, you're mixing the soil a little bit. You're mixing the nutrients in.
Sometimes I know I'll just put it on the top knowing I'm going to be mm-hmm. doing something later. But then maybe later is in a long time, and it may wash off the top, you know, like powdered bone meal, before I actually get a chance to mix it in. I may have to reapply. Or, you know, I don't know if I need to reapply. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about what other facets of year-round gardening people might consider.
Great.
My guest is Carol Carver. She is from Island End Farm on Puget Island. And you're listening to Digging the Dirt. We'll be right back. And if you want to join us, or you have a question or a comment, give a call at 503-325-0010. We'll be right back.
Barbe-Pelon, dit la sorcière, fut torturée au fond du cachot.
Barbe-Pelon, dit la sorcière, fut torturée au fond du cachot.
Elle envoya de son bûcher un dernier sort sur les gens du château. Ainsi promis de la princesse, le chevalier si tendre et aimant.
Ainsi promis de la princesse, le chevalier si tendre et aimant.
Sous la grande halle de la cathédrale, soudainement fut emmuré vivant,
fut emmuré vivant. Au cœur du ventre de l'antre, l'homme criant du fond des cryptes pour que les pierres le libèrent et nous raconte le temps des
mythes. Well, we're back and. You're listening to Dig in the Dirt. I'm Ann Goldin, and I'm with Carol Carver. She is a farmer from Puget Island and is also has a booth with her husband, George, at the,
it's the River People Farmers
Thank you.
Market
the
on
River,
Thursdays.
The Thursday afternoon Astoria Market, which is a wonderful market. And if you haven't been there, this Thursday would be a great time to go, and you can find them standing behind lots of jars of kimchi and sauerkraut and lots of fresh veggies every Thursday afternoon. Okay, so we were talking about winter gardening and scratching in or digging in fertilizers, compost, manure, whatever.
I think that fertilization is one thing people need to consider for winter gardening because they may have used up some of the amendments that are in their soil for the earlier planting. So you don't want to have so much nitrogen in your soil that plants get leggy and lush and then get hit with cold, rotten, rainy weather, but you do need to make sure that you've got enough nitrogen and lime in your soil for things to grow.
Oh, we found out that our vegetable bed in the community garden, the soil was down almost to a 5 pH.
Oh, my goodness.
And you know, we have been liming twice a year. Obviously not enough lime.
Lime will build up over the years, but I think along with nitrogen, it's been my experience that it also leaches out with the rain, and of course that's what we have around here.
And we have had a lot this year, so that makes sense. So then we should be liming with our compost or whatever we're putting in.
Yeah, or checking to see whether you need to add lime. A lot of the veggies that you're planting to overwinter are in families that like a really neutral soil. So lime is important. Well, otherwise, you'll put plants in and they'll just stay stunted, and that'll be your big clue that they don't have what they need to keep growing.
Yeah. And you know, that has been what's happened in our beds there.
Mm-hmm.
Which we never had in our old garden, but there we did.
Well, you know, to get back to why even bother planning for winter vegetables, mm-hmm. because I think a lot of people are summer gardeners and they like to sort of pack the garden up and not think about it during the winter and have time for other things to do. But I'd like people to consider that in addition to having those fresh vegetables, and the winter vegetables, the ones that really make it through the winter, are highly nutritious, the collards and all the different kinds of kales especially. Winter gardening is a challenge, and I think if you look at it like that, and you look at it as kind of a gamble and not be too... You know, if you fail, okay, well, that's you tried. That's kind of my attitude. And if you succeed, you're gonna really benefit from it. It also allows you to experiment with seed saving, because a lot of the plants that go to seed need to go through the winter in the ground. And I have thoroughly enjoyed looking at plants in my garden and picking out ones that are nice vegetables that have the characteristics that I'm looking for, or that are especially hardy, ones that went through the winter without me even covering them because I kind of forgot about them, and letting those go to seed and saving seed from them. For example, right now we have a beautiful Michelle lettuce, which is kind of a French Batavian leaf lettuce that is about 3 feet tall and just getting ready to bloom, and we'll save seed from that. We also have maybe 20 or 30 chard plants that we planted last April. We ate on them, you know, the entire summer. Four or five families ate on them every week all winter long, and now they're 7-8 feet tall, and they're all in seed. So we'll have tons of chard seed. In fact, I'm going to be giving chard seed away at Farm Stock in September, and I hope I have a chance to talk a little bit more about Farm Stock in a minute.
Absolutely. Well, we just had an interesting thing. We had this one wonderful dinosaur kale plant that we ate from all winter, one plant, and about 3 or 4 feet tall, maybe 4 or 5 feet tall, and it got aphids, and the plant was broken off and tossed, and right before the seeds were mature, or so we thought, and we thought we were heartbroken because, you know, how many, 1,000 seeds on there, and you know, that's what we were, that's why we saved it, and somebody took it and protected it, and we got the seed, we got the plant, you know, we got it back, and we started trying to see if we could actually get the seeds to do anything, and they're growing like mad. We decided to just right away.
Oh, the seeds sprouted?
Yes.
Oh, wonderful.
So we, you know, we put a chunk in, and to see if it, we have hundreds, like way way more than, so they're viable, even though they were pulled up more prematurely than I would have thought. So we have, you know, I don't know. We have a yogurt container full of chard seeds.
Lifetime supply.
Right. Well, I'm hoping. Yeah.
Great.
So, I think that's great. We had a caller who wanted to talk about, or wanted us to talk about, the difference between using compost and Miracle-Gro. Of course, Miracle-Gro is very, it's not cost effective in the garden. You know, that might be fine in an indoor plant, but it's not really appropriate in the garden.
Well, Miracle-Gro is not an organic product. It's chemicals that mm-hmm. have been combined to give you your nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. And it doesn't add, other than adding those chemicals, it doesn't add anything else. It doesn't add any tilth, which you would get from compost. It doesn't add the positive bacteria that you're going to get from compost.
It doesn't improve your soil structure.
Exactly.
Yes.
Thank
right.
you. Yes.
Right. So it's not really the right thing in the garden.
Well, it depends on your perspective, but my perspective is that we need to be feeding the soil and building the soil so that, you know, when we're long gone, the soil is still there and is in good shape and someone can grow in it. When you dump chemicals into the soil, you're getting away from that. You're not taking care of the soil itself.
Right, right. So that is that. So let's talk a little bit about Farm Stock. It is on Labor Day weekend, and you and George are going to be doing some classes, workshops. There are going to be a whole bunch of workshops, and you're organizing them.
There are going to be more workshops this year than there were last year. The workshops will run from 10:30 to 3 on Saturday and 10:30 to 1 on Sunday. Some of the topics that are confirmed include biochar, fruit winemaking, eating locally, seasoning globally, from a new business woman here in Astoria that has a spice shop on Commercial, Pat's Pantry, I think it's called. We're also going to have a workshop on growing and using lavender, on the challenges of maritime gardening, on seed saving, and an introduction to making tinctures from homegrown and wild plants. Fred Johnson, is going to be doing the farm-to-table dinner on Sunday, and he will be doing a class on cooking with bay shrimp, which will figure into his meal on Sunday.
Oh, fun. So he'll be doing the workshop and then be serving the food.
Right.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
And North Coast Food Web will be there. Pacific County Community Gardens will be there. And we're also looking for, we're still recruiting vendors. Julie Tennis from Nacelle has been doing a wonderful job of facilitating the planning for Farm Stock. And it is real exercise in herding cats. It's just amazing how she's been facilitating this. And she asks that people that would like to be considered to be a vendor to email her. Her email is julietennis@gmail.com. Vendors will be charged $25 flat fee, and the booths need to have some relation to the theme, which is local gardening, farming, and that sort of thing. But if you would like to see if your idea would work, you could just email Julie. She is definitely looking for more vendors.
And so, okay, a vendor is someone who will be selling something there.
Right.
So people that are coming that are hungry?
Well, yes, food.
Whether it's food in the, like, potatoes that you grew or something that you prepared from local food?
They're also looking for food vendors.
Good, we need more food vendors.
Because there will be food available all day long. Mm-hmm. There will be live music both days, all day long. They'll have acoustic music in the morning when the workshops are taking place, and then amplified music is going to start at 3. And that farm-to-table dinner, I understand people get their tickets from KMUN. This is a fundraiser for KMUN. So I'm sure that that you will be having some more announcements about that farm to table.
Oh, absolutely.
Dinner.
So some of the other vendors from the River People's Market will be vendors at this.
That's my understanding. I think they're going to try to have a tailgate farmers market. I'm not quite sure about that. But
well, that happened last year, and it was great.
Did. We had our ferments there.
yeah.
And there's also overnight camping. Mm-hmm. We did camp, and I hope a whole lot more people do.
We camped also. It was fun.
That way we could listen to music late into the night and not have to get up and drive home or come back again the next morning.
That's right.
So it was a great event, and September 1st and 2nd, I hope people put it on their calendars. And
It was a great event. It was a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it.
You know, there's a few more things that I'd like to mention in terms of year-round gardening. I did mention the seed selection, that people should look for seed that are adapted, and also pay attention to days of maturity. For example, I just planted Brussels sprouts yesterday, and it's pretty late for Brussels sprouts. These are plants that I started a month ago. But the ones that will be successful have a 70-day maturity date compared to Brussels sprouts are all over the ballpark with their maturity dates. So I planted ones that have 160-day maturity date, but I'm unlikely to get Brussels sprouts from them. It's just worth a try.
But that's another plant that can overwinter.
Absolutely.
And so maybe they won't get mature, but as soon as it gets warm in the spring, if they don't die, they'll go. I mean, sometimes they will die if it's really freezing.
That's true. And I think you're bringing up a point. Plants do not really grow in the heart of winter. It's like they're sitting in a refrigerator. they basically stop growing in October, November, and then restart in November. And you may need to cover them. I would like to just mention before we run out of time that I guess this is a bigger topic than a half an hour, but some plants might need cover to make it through the winter. For example, those chard plants that I talked to you about, they were under plastic, and when I went to harvest them, I just took the tunnel off and picked the leaves and put the tunnel back on.
They definitely have an easier time if you do that.
Right. Other things like celery and parsley will also make it through the winter with just a little bit of cover. And lettuces, cold hardy lettuces.
I haven't found parsley ever needed any help at all. I have it all
and it
over my yard.
It reseeds pretty well, too.
Yeah,
yes.
It reseeds well. Well, thank you very much. My guest has been Carol Carver. You can meet her on Thursday afternoons at the River People's Market and try some sauerkraut, kimchi, and wonderful vegetables. Thanks a lot for coming in.
Thank you, Ann.
I'm Ann Goldine.